Welcome to the Two World Podcast, where you can hear thoughts and reflections on unique intersections between faith and culture. Tune in regularly for this foray into feelings of surprise and interconnectedness and aha moments in life when two worlds come together. Now join your hosts, Barney and Jacob, for this most recent episode.
Good morning, everyone from Ohio, where it is morning. Welcome to this edition of the Two World Podcast, where today we are going to talk about an episode from the 1990s TV show called Northern Exposure. This episode is one where we will delve into searching and love and the pain of and the shock of relationships that occur. I would like to very much welcome our two co-hosts this morning. First, we have...
I am Barney.
And I am Jacob.
And I am Ken, and I truly hope you will find enjoyment in what we have to offer this morning. Thank you.
Well, Ken and Barney, I know that you know a lot about Northern Exposure, of course. And as I was doing a little bit of research about this episode for today, I didn't realize how celebrated of an episode it is in terms of nominations for writing and awards. And I just was searching on online for some trivia about it, and just seemed like it is one of those episodes that is very highly esteemed, The Big Kiss. And it was kind of interesting going back to season two after we've ventured out into other seasons, and to kind of rewind a bit and go back to season two. So I kind of wanted to ask, you know, why do you think this episode is so celebrated, and maybe even what drew you to pick it for our list of ones to discuss? So I don't know if either of you would like to jump on that question or not.
Yeah, I guess I can start off why I decided to choose this one. I thought this is a really interesting episode for Ed. And I don't know that we've had an episode that really focuses a whole lot on Ed, where much of the episode focuses on history. And it's interesting to see the background, because we don't really know much about Ed up to this point. We know that we know his personality, and we know what he does and his likes and interests. But here's a chance to see a real kind of deeper side of him, and, you know, make us wonder about, oh, wow, how is it that Ed got here in Sicily? You know, we know how Ruth Ann got there. We know how Chris got there. We know how
Maurice.
Maurice and Joel and Maggie, how they got there. But what about Ed? You know, was he always there the whole time? But and why? And then, you know, we see a real interesting picture of Ed, and also we see an interesting picture of his community, in the kind of indigenous community in Sicily. And then maybe my thoughts of why maybe it's so highly acclaimed, maybe, is, I don't know, when I watch this episode, I come away feeling really intrigued and interested about all the different references to kind of myth or fantasy or, you know, kind of legendary stories in it, and how they weave that in to Chris's story and also Ed's story. And it just has this nice, real, solid build to the whole story. The episode really flows well together and coalesces well together. And I think that this thread of, like, this uncovering, you know, like, kind of our humanity's personal stories, you know, if it comes from Sir Gawain, or if it comes from, you know, some indigenous thinking that, you know, speak a little bit to who we are. And maybe maybe Chris's story isn't so relatable, and maybe Ed's story also isn't so relatable on the surface. But when we look at them deeper, I think in by being guided by these myths, I think that we can find a connection within ourselves too. And it kind of sneaks up on you when you think about what the synopsis of the show is. You think, oh, well, that sounds interesting. But then when you get into it, it really pulls you in. And we don't think that it will. I, in my personal opinion, I didn't think it would pull me in, but it really does. And maybe that's one of the reasons why it garnered such attention. But how about for yourself, Ken?
Well, first of all, Barney, very well said. Those feelings are there. For me, about all I can add is, although spirituality of sorts was addressed, hinted at in the first season, early in the second season, we really get a full dose of what it means, especially to the Intuit culture. And to me, it feels very believable. I think it makes the viewers sit back and really think about where they are on a spiritual level and what I believe, what you believe, and yet let this into your consciousness and follow Ed's story with One Who Waits. It just felt very believable.
Yeah, when I was thinking of some questions, one question that I almost decided to ask us was, you know, it is One Who Waits, and I guess after I go through this question, we'll probably have to go through a synopsis of what we're talking about here, but is One Who Waits a figment of Ed's imagination? That was a question that came to my mind while I was watching it. But then in Joel's office, you know, Marilyn says, you know, goodbye, Chief. And I thought, oh, wow, okay, it's definitely not Ed. This is the real deal. And, you know, like Ken mentioned in our conversation, you know, behind the scenes, you know, it goes a little bit more to show, you know, how blind, quote unquote, blind, you know, white people really can be, as they mentioned in the episode.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because in that office scene, I think it's the same scene, Barney, Joel simply says to Ed that you're deluded, you know, but that nicely written clincher from Marilyn,
yeah.
beautifully done.
Maybe before we go too much further, before we get carried away, Ken, would you mind giving a little bit of kind of a rundown and outline of how the show actually goes, especially the two main stories that we've touched on briefly, but for people who maybe haven't seen the episode yet,
sure,
or in a while.
Sure, great idea. Yeah, the beginning of the show, basically, Chris, who is the DJ at the radio station K-Bear, is visited by an attractive woman who is asking directions, simple as that. But he is absolutely shocked for some reason, not necessarily just by her physical appearance, but whatever is going on here. And he loses his voice, which is quite a detriment to the job he's attempting to perform. And we can get into some of the bits and pieces that follow that. Ed has become very, very curious, more so than maybe in previous years in his life, about finding his origins, finding his parents, which he does not have knowledge of, and thus the search in this episode for him. And is that enough to get us going, Barney? Something you would?
Yeah, maybe we should
add to that.
Say, you know, we've already mentioned One Who Waits a few times. So his I love that when he's sleeping and then we hear Ed, you know, wake up, and his spiritual guide, you know, One Who Waits, who I don't have the information here with me, but that actor is also the actor who played One Who Waits has been in many, many films and TV shows as well. So he was a very well-known you know, native, you know, First Nation actor as well. And I thought his part is just perfect. He really does a great job acting in that show. And I just really enjoyed that. That was another reason why I chose this episode for us.
Sure. Yeah, One Who Waits, yeah, that actor was terrific. It's not over-dramatized. It's there are elements of humor that help lighten the situation. You know, when they're out in nature searching and the wind doesn't answer and the water doesn't answer, that could have been a very traumatic and serious moment. And it's almost like a flashback to the movie Apollo 13 when One Who Waits says, Ed, I think we have a problem here. Lightens the moment.
Yeah. Yeah.
Jacob, your reaction to some of these things.
Yeah, I really like the opening of the episode. And I agree with Barney that exploring Ed's story is fascinating because it is a window into the broader Inuit culture. And I love that about the show in general, that it is a really intercultural show. And the whole idea of legend and like a more of a spiritual worldview, and that it becomes commonplace and normal as Ed is talking with the one who waits. And yeah, I like that this show takes supernatural things sometimes like that, or things that we wouldn't expect, and just makes them commonplace. Like, oh yeah, of course. And the people who can't seem to get it actually are the ones who seem a little bit out of the loop, you know, and silly, not the ones who have these visions that would typically be seen as like they're off the rocker or something. No, it's rather those of us who don't have eyes to see that are the ones who are missing out. So it's kind of fascinating twist. Mm-hmm. I like that a lot. And I do like the theme of searching. I think it's really well done in this episode. Lots of people are searching. Definitely Ed, of course, but then Chris searching for his voice again. So I think it was a great choice. I'm glad you guys picked it.
Well, maybe it's time to address one of the questions Barney posed to us about any great searches come to mind for you gentlemen in your lives.
Yeah, I kind of feel like I always felt like once I went to Thailand on volunteer time with MCC, I kind of felt like that was kind of a start of a search for me. And it felt for some reason like I was more at home or more at peace living in an Asian culture, but I just wasn't sure which one. And so I had the chance to spend time in Hong Kong and also Macau and then finally in Japan. And I kind of felt like maybe this was a search for my belonging in a way that I felt more at peace than necessarily in the way that the culture where I grew up was structured. And I really did feel when I was going through it that this was some kind of search or some kind of journey, like trying to find a little bit more about myself and kind of trying to find a place, you know, a place to belong, you know, the kind of the right place where I fit in best. And I think that finally, maybe I've completed that search for the time being, but it really did feel like there was some real importance to what I was going through. And yeah, I'm very thankful for my older brother Jay having done the same MCC program when he went to Paraguay to kind of set a precedence, and of course for my parents you know, suggesting that I do it, and the people at Whisper Man Night for supporting me to get there, and that it worked out with my education at Goshen that they accepted that plan too as part of, you know, the alternate to the study service term that they usually require people to take, that they accepted my time with MCC in lieu of that. And so, yeah, everything fell into place for me to be able to go on that journey. And I'm really thankful that I was able to do that.
That's really interesting, Barney. I don't think I've ever heard you explain it quite in that way. I've heard different parts of the story, but I like that, you had a kind of clarity about where you were drawn to live at, and that contributed to that. And what a great insight considering where you live now. And so, mm-hmm. and your family in Japan. And I wonder if Ayako would have any similar reflections in terms of her overlap with you when you were in Thailand, or if that experience for her was helping her realize, you know, intercultural things are important to me. Maybe I'll even select a spouse from another country. Right.
Yeah, I wonder too if maybe she felt, you know, a little bit limited in her selection of, you know, yeah, right, the type of potential, you know, companions to be with. And maybe she felt drawn in that way to someone with a different view as well. I do wonder if that was part of her thinking too.
What I find interesting about both of you guys is at a relatively young age, in a sense, your horizons were expanded in kind of a worldly traveling kind of view. Barney, what you described, Jacob, I know, you know, as a young man, you got to go to Israel and travel there. As I grew up, the radius of my experience heading into my 20s was about an hour and a half from home. Yeah. You know, it's just a family that we didn't travel. And so I know as I went through my 20s and became married and so on, you really, really, really start to think, because even, you know, well, teaching and everything else, there wasn't a lot of cultural enhancement. I need to see what the rest of this world's about in some way. So camping every year, where we camped in Vermont at a state park, the beach was attached to the campground. And to sit on that beach at any given moment, you could hear three or four different languages, because there's Middlebury College and people who stayed around during the summer are going to come to the beach. And it took a lot for me to conjure up courage to walk up to some of these folks and start a conversation, and to learn a little bit about their story and where they are from. But I think that gave me a nice start to learning about the rest of this wide world we live in, kind of culminating in my experience at the OERDC, where in a much more intimate way, especially with the grad students, but not exclusive of the faculty, because we have people from all over the world there, to really feel in touch with their cultural experiences and how they grew up and how they view America as well. So, but it took me a while. I grew up very safe, you know, no doubt about that. But the danger in growing up very safe is that stepping out, and that was a difficult thing.
That's interesting. I think each of us is kind of drawn to a little bit different type of story when it comes to searching. The one that jumps out to me first is actually related to my journey of grief. After my parents passed away, my dad in 2012 and my mom in 2014. And so it felt like a new era for me without them. And I was searching for some kind of answer or comfort or clarity about how I was going to navigate that new season without them. And I remember going home to visit where I had grown up and the house that I had lived in with my family multiple times, and finding so much comfort in the presence of the friends of my parents who still lived there, and my childhood friend and his family. And I was in a sense getting my grounding and finding a way to have a sense of family and with the absence of my parents. But then I remember there were a couple of visits we went when nobody was available to connect. And so we ended up staying one time in the house when it was empty, just the empty house. And, you know, it was really stark. And it kind of made me think, okay, what am I looking for here in this place? Like, a place is only a place with the sense of home because of the people. And when the people aren't there, you know, you can enjoy the memories, but it can't take you to the same emotional experience of feeling at home. And so I think, you know, then it started to shift for me, and I started to kind of be able to let go of some of the grief and realize my parents are still with me and I'm still connected to them through my faith, through Jesus, through the spiritual connection, mm-hmm. but also like through all the stories and the memories, and just have a real sense of their presence with me. And so then visiting the physical place wasn't quite as crucial. And I was sharing with Barney recently, one of my childhood friends, he lost his father, and his mom was reading through this book about grief. And she came upon this idea where it was saying that when we lose someone, we go on this long search for them. And when we kind of come to the end of that and kind of start over and come back to ourselves, we realize that they were with us all along. Mm. And I guess maybe that would be my conclusion, that was at the result or at end of my search for my parents, that they were with me all along, and that I just had to go through the steps of visiting the places to realize that. So,
mm-hmm. Well, I think Chris in the morning would affirm your idea of the place is just the place. You know, I was near the end of the program, I think, when he said, you know, Voltaire says music is the pathway to the heart, speech is that connector, is that pathway to how do you put it, to other people, to connecting with other people, which sounded like, you know, it was an important thing you needed perhaps at that time, as opposed to just being at the place. Wow, that's a poignant story, Jacob.
Thank you. Yes. Well, when you were hearing our different responses to the question, are there any connections that came up with the show or characters in the show or parts of the story that you'd like to highlight?
I kind of wonder if... Oh, yeah, sorry. I'm trying to remember. What was it... Because I think that Ed went to the bingo hall, and I really enjoyed that scene, especially when what was it? Some of the women said, "You believe fast, Cloud?" You know, they're like, one year he thought he was Joe DiMaggio or something like that. But I think, what was it, the movie Waste Town?
Yes.
It? Yeah. Yes. That I felt like that was kind of the impetus, kind of the starting point for Ed to kind of reflect on who he is and realize that he is an orphan too, in a way. And I felt like there was that kind of nudging, that kind of realizing that he was missing something. I can kind of see a connection of that starting point, maybe with Ken and your story, realizing that, you know, you hadn't seen much or a big part of your life outside of, you know, just the area around your house, but you're realizing there's something that is missing. And then you had like camping as a way to kind of get that search started, and you know, getting out, getting away, and you know, from where you were. And I felt that like that kind of same kind of course, like Ed kind of went on that same course, where first he had to realize what he was missing, and then he got out, and then thankfully, you know, One Who Waits came to him and really got him out and took him to places where I don't think he would have thought to go. We don't really get the sense that right now that Ed is really concerned about spiritualism as relates to his indigenous culture at this point in the show. But so I don't think he would have thought, I don't think he knew what to do, even after talking with everyone at the bingo hall. You know, the only thing they agreed on was his dad's last name, you know, as everyone says together, Smith, you know, at the same time. And then I did, but it felt like I didn't hear this part in your story, but it felt like you weren't necessarily camping alone, right? You were, maybe someone
Right.
was kind of leading you in that way to get into camping. And we kind of see one who waits guiding Ed at the same time, I wonder.
Yeah, I liked your word impetus, Barney, because yes, that is so important. And Jacob, you alluded to it as well with people who lifted you up. Yeah, I think after starting to have the bravery to ask people about their stories in a Vermont setting, you know, coming back, I'm reminded of my home church at the time and how it could be a pastor, it could be another member, it could be whatever. There's a person there that was an impetus for me to then stretch out a little bit and get into performing. You know, first of all, that safety net of within the church walls. But this person also happened to be the community theater director of the majority of performances there, and she was not just with me. She was just a person who could get you to do things without being all that forceful or pushy. And I'm always thankful to her for that.
Yeah, those are good connections. Thank you both for sharing. I'm wondering if we could talk a little bit about some of the connecting stories in the episode, in addition to Ed, as they relate to searching. And so we have Ed searching for the answer. Who is his father? What's his background? Wants to know more about his parents. We have Chris searching for his voice. As we've already said, he mysteriously, in this ex unexpected encounter with this guest who stops by the radio station, loses his voice because he's struck by her beauty, and then he's trying to find a way to get it back. Are there other characters that are searching for things that you might want to highlight, and how do they connect with this broader theme of searching?
I feel like Maggie, in a way, is trying to, she's searching, I think she's searching her feelings for Joel. So we still are early on in the show. And, it just kind of, I don't know if it's by default or whatnot, but, Maggie is tagged as the most beautiful woman, in town. Interesting that it wasn't Shelley, but I love how everyone's story, right away, one who waits nails it. His voice was stolen by beauty. That's a time old, problem. We've all been there, kind of from one who waits point of view. And then Maurice backs that up with his story of Sir Gawain losing his courage. And they both, I love how they both, the solution is the same. One who waits puts it more delicately. He has to capture her spirit, but then Ed translates that for us, in a more, clearer terms. But then Maggie understands what she needs to hope, what she needs to do in some sense to help Chris get his voice back. But we see her searching for how does she feel about Joel, in the one way she's taken in by Chris, when she doesn't know what's going on. And then when she realizes what's going on, it becomes kind of motivation for her. She's, thinking that Joel is so smug, and there he is, and she's not going to let him have the satisfaction of, whatever. And so this is very all comical and fun to see. But then she realizes that, she comes to the point where she says to Chris, she's sorry, she just can't go through with it. And then her thoughts about Joel come up again. And then she says, she's gonna do it, but she's gonna do it in her own way to give Chris his voice back. And then in a way, we also see Joel searching his feelings about Maggie while he's outside with Maurice, wondering what's going on inside the house, you know? And then, so it's fun to see these two who have a lot of conflict between them, you know, on a normal day. But then when they're wondering what the other one is thinking, we see them searching about their feelings about that person. And then we see that they really do have feelings for one another. But sadly or not, depending on how you look at how the story, the whole series itself goes, you know, they rarely admit these feelings to one another and really barely do anything about it. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I think in totality, Maggie is truly, without revealing the whole rest of the series, Maggie is always searching. I think she, you know, when you learn a little bit about how she was brought up, you know, she's, you get the feeling she's meant to feel inadequate at times. And so she really stepped out to Alaska to search for what might be an answer. But the entire series, Joel is a searcher as well, certainly. And again, as the series progresses, his search becomes more pronounced. Just a huge, huge part of how the series culminates. I do love the interconnectedness with One Who Waits being that impetus, not only for Ed, but he is the first one to tell Chris what needs to be done. And I loved how they brought Maurice into that subplot as well, telling the story of Lancelot and all of that, how he lost his courage and was able to regain it. There's how you get awards in writing and you know.
Yeah, I think that's interesting because when they were telling the story, I feel like it got interrupted before it was explained that Lancelot regained his voice. And I think what was the person, if I'm remembering this right, were they kind of frustrated, like, well, why are you telling me this bad news, you know, type of, or am I remembering that right? And then actually the story ends that he regains, like the reason the story was told was actually to be an encouragement. Like it can get better.
I think Chris was disturbed by Maurice saying a curse, you know, curse, that's a strong word, a curse was put on him. And then it did turn out okay in the end, by the way.
Okay.
And in case we forget, Maurice's funniest line in the show, good luck on finding your voice soon, Chris. And if not, good luck finding a new job.
Yes.
It didn't have to be said, Maurice, but you said it.
Oh, my. Well, it's so fascinating to a parallel part of the story. You know, this theme has come up of people being struck by others who they find beautiful. Like The One Who Waits tells the story of the one that he ultimately married, who he saw her riding a horse in like a meadow. And he was just awestruck by her beauty and her presence. And then Chris, obviously, in the opening of the episode with his visitor. But Maurice has this dream about Shelley. And if you kind of sense that he hasn't figured out what to do with the feelings he had for her, I unfortunately don't know much about that part of the story because I haven't seen those episodes, but I'm guessing it's a little window into what happened earlier where he wanted to be with Shelley perhaps a bit. And then she ended up going with Holling. But anyway, so it's kind of a parallel. Maurice is working through that. You know, he had been maybe impressed with Shelley and he's searching for a way. And you kind of see him throughout the episode, you know, and she asks him if he wants more coffee. And then he asks kind of some confusing answer for her about that. But it really, what's under the surface is he's frustrated because he doesn't know what to do with those feelings he had. So I don't know if either of you would want to talk about how Maurice comes through that. I have a sense of when that moment was that kind of brought relief to it, but I would love to hear what you both think about what brought him relief from that.
I can give a little of the background, and Barney, maybe you can enhance. What you're seeing in the dream is, in part, Maurice brought Shelley to Alaska. She was the Northwest Passage Queen, and Maurice saw her in kind of an infatuated way as the girl for him. He brings her to Alaska, and it doesn't work out. She, as you know, Jacob, ends up with Halling, and which created in the early part of the series a huge rift between longtime friends Halling and Maurice. So then Maurice is left to, maybe for the first time, address in his mind the issue of infatuation versus true pangs of love. Barney, if you could.
Yeah, and I love the I love the music that they had during the dream. It was the song "Pretty Lady" from the musical Pacific Overtures, and I thought it fit wonderfully with the dream, but it also kind of had that kind of medieval kind of feel to it, kind of a real. It really made me. When I heard, and before I knew what musical it was from, I thought, oh, this really connects well with that Sir Gawain story. You know, it really has kind of an Arthurian feel to the song. The song does have it, that kind of feel to it. And wonderful the way that they link those two together. But yeah, we see a number of times this keeps coming up for poor Maurice, you know, getting jilted. You know, he finds Shelley and he just is so enamored with her. And, you know, he brings her back to Sicily, you know, thinking that she'll, you know, be his companion. And then she just, you know, she falls for Halling. And I think we saw that episode where Halling has his midlife crisis and she does the puppet show, you know, also kind of outlining how the story went. And, you know, but a number of times this comes back up for Maurice, even much, much later, maybe the fifth or sixth season. Maurice really has a hard time, you know, admitting that maybe Shelley didn't love him or he misremembers. And Shelley kind of gaslights him a bit, you know, not wanting to admit that she really did love him. But and then in the end, she admits, you know, she reminds him that yes, she really did love him. And we see like how he thought, you know, he's like Jacob and Ken were saying, how he's real conflicted, thinking, well, you know, hearing Chris's story, hearing Halling's story, remembering, you know, Halling had a real bad crick in his neck, and he actually gets that a few times, I think one or two times in different episodes. And then Maurice is thinking, oh, well, you know, maybe he wasn't in love with her because he didn't feel this kind of intense emotion when he met her. And then, yeah, she says to him, you know, kind of just in passing, oh, she said, you know, she was sick as a dog, you know, the whole time they were together. And it you see him kind of feel good about that, you know. Thinking, well, yeah, hey, you know, maybe she really did have feelings for me. She just had ended up with stronger feelings for Halling. But we kind of see him get a little solace from hearing that she was afflicted because of him.
That's the moment I was thinking of. I felt like mm-hmm. that was very meaningful to Maurice and helped him move past his resentment or his frustration. Mm-hmm. When he heard that, you could just see on his face kind of a, we'll all be kind of surprise and relief and interesting. Yes. Well, so we talked a little bit about then the search that Maurice is undergoing, the search that Maggie's undergoing, that Joel's undergoing, that Chris is undergoing, and that Ed continues to undergo. So they're all resolved in subtly different ways. But the title of the episode is Big Kiss. And so Chris's journey is resolved through this big kiss. So perhaps we could unpack that a little bit and talk about it. And just by way of trivia, I had come across this, that when they were shooting the big kiss scene, they actually had to shoot it from a few different angles because had you heard this before? Because the actor John Corbett accidentally scratched the actress Janine Turner when they were doing the scene for the kiss, and so they had to change when they went to kiss each other. He accidentally scratched her, so they had to shoot from different angles. But I had heard it as a piece of trivia. Do either of you know what the first word Chris says after the kiss?
When he comes outside,
just the very first thing he says.
Wow.
Yeah. Interesting. So I had, does he say the word buffalo at any point? Do you know after he's kissed? I thought I'd read some trivia about that, but now I'm doubting this trivia piece. So I'm just going to drop that. But anyway, so this big kiss happens, which is the restoration of Chris's voice. And it came slightly differently than expected. Maggie said, you know what? I'm going to give you your voice back to you. Not in the way that was originally thought. I can't offer it in that way, but I can give it back to you with this big kiss. And so he's very grateful in that moment. And like you said, he says, well, so is there anything else that we might say about like the fallout from the big kiss or what it meant for the different characters? Like, obviously for Chris, restoration of his voice, he was very pleased, but what about for Maggie or for Joel? Or I know the town gets their DJ back, so I mean that's one impact. He doesn't lose his job. Are there other impacts that we might notice? Or
I like Maurice explaining it to Joel. You know, Joel is so confounded, you know, in part because he's really torn about how he feels about Maggie. But Maurice says, you know, here in the wilderness, you know, people will do what they have to do for the community. You know, this isn't about Maggie. This isn't about Chris. This isn't about how they feel about each other. This is about getting the DJ back, you know, for the community. This is about helping Chris to get his voice back. And you know, Joel is a man of science. You know, he can't quite understand this. He can't quite buy into it. He's still just so hung up on the fact that Maggie, you know, might be kissing somebody else. But we see this real emphasis on community above others in other episodes too. And so it's neat how this is like a real focus on everyone. Everyone's gathered there to kind of cheer them on, and they're cheering. And I love Chris walks out the door and there's quiet, and someone says, "Did it work?" You know, and then he says, "Wow." So, you know, people are really interested, you know, and here again, we have this legend, this mythology, you know, coming into reality as the show does so well, you know, mixing these two together. And, you know, here it is, you know, the cure, you know, Joel is, you know, spending time trying to figure out what's wrong with Chris. I love the charades scene where Joel just can't get what Chris has tried to describe. But Marilyn says, you know, right away, he had his voice stolen by Beauty. And then later Joel stops by and, you know, says, you know, "I've been talking with this specialist and it could be this and it could be this and it could be this." And then, you know, he can't accept that, you know, what One Who Waits says and what Maurice hints at, that it could be, you know, something completely different. And then we see that come to be at the end of the episode. But then I don't know, Ken, what did you think about Joel's reaction when he finds Chris later in the DJ booth?
First of all, I love the wow, because as a viewer, I can remember, just I know they have to go to Joel here, because people on the outside have no clue what happened on the inside. And I love that the writers gave that piece to it. And Joel, of course, he is aghast, and he, you know, feigning disgust, because deep down he probably wishes it were he. You know, we're left to decipher that. And then in the booth, Chris, who probably was not beyond giving not graphic but details of perhaps some previous conquests in his life romantically, has really chosen to not tell at all what has happened here, even with Joel prodding him to get to the bottom line of the truth, which he never does get to, and he's still left to try to guess in the end. I guess in a sense, I'm almost, maybe there was, you guys can help out here, my memory's fading on this, that there wasn't another scene with Maggie then where Joel is trying to get the truth out of her. I don't think they went that direction, but it could have been done. And I think we know the result of that as well. She would much enjoy having Joel left in the dark on all of this. And Maggie was empowered. I love how they empowered her to give a kiss and nothing more. That was kind of neat.
It's interesting how some characters are left with unanswered questions in the midst of their search while others receive an answer. And Ed is kind of in the middle where he receives enough of an answer to be content without maybe the full explanation or this kind of nagging sense of, is it what we think it seems to be? And it's enough. So maybe we could talk a little bit about, like we just said there, Joel has the unanswered question at the end of the episode about Maggie. Chris gets his voice. Maurice finds his peace with his feelings about Shelley. But Ed also finds his peace in an interaction he has with somebody on the side of the road trying to get their vehicle working. And we kind of come to find out as that person's driving off that they're Smith. their last name is Smith. And so there's this glimmer in Ed's eyes. Did he just meet his father? And we don't know. There's no definitive answer given, but he seems pleased. And so could we talk a little bit about that moment? Like how for Ed, he can find joy in things that maybe other people might want more clarity, but for him, that's enough. What does that mean? And what did that scene say to you as you saw that?
I loved how the Smith character endeared himself to not only Ed, but to us as the viewers by saying, you know, make sure you zip up your coat, which is a very fatherly thing to say. So we're led to speculate then of, is this the guy? Without being a total spoiler, I'll just offer two words, especially for you, Jacob. Stay tuned. There's a further exploration.
Okay. Oh, that's good to know.
Yeah. Another wonderful combination of music that they put with the final scene there. And I can't remember. Was there a call of an eagle in that episode or in that scene? I kind of think there was. I just can't remember. That's another thing that they like to throw in there, like when something special is happening. But yeah, I was going to say too, like the father, the way he acts fatherly toward Ed, just friendly, you know, but in a real fatherly way. And then we see the same leather jacket and oh, he might look a little bit similar too. And of course, yeah, he might be young enough to have had a son and not know what to do with him. And then, you know, leave him by a tree. And what was it, a bearskin blanket or something like that. And then, yeah, he says, you know, as he's driving away, you know, Smith, and we don't see Ed. We don't see, you know, like some shows might end it with like Ed, you know, like it dawning on him and him being shocked and like thinking, oh, come back, you know, but instead we see kind of a sense of peace that, you know, one who waits said he's never had this much trouble on a search before. And he's sorry, he's got to go back. He doesn't know what to do. And then we have Ed again. He started without a guide and now he's ending without a guide too. And he kind of feels like, you know, maybe this is what he was thinking. This is his answer. And then the way that he drives off and the music plays and then fade to black. And just such a nice way to end that episode. What a really interesting way and an interesting way to think that Ed's character and maybe in his culture, maybe there's a lot of being okay with the ambiguity. You know, there isn't a need for, you know, a clear yes or a clear no by this person or that person, but just kind of working more in Ed's case by feeling, and he felt good about the way that he interacted with this guy helping him to finish up changing his tire.
I wanted to ask a little bit as we are reflecting on the end of the story about a question that Ken asked. And I think it's about sight and blindness. And in the episode, a number of people aren't able to see the one who waits. And, you know, those who can see him, for them, he's a helpful presence and adds to their understanding. But I want to think about the story as a whole and what people can see or can't see. And by the time we get to the end with Ed, it feels like he has this greater understanding. And I just wondered if we could talk a little bit about that sense of sight and not sight. Like, Joel can't see the one who waits. Joel can't see a lot of things in this episode.
Oh, yeah.
So it's kind of like the sight metaphor leaves Joel a little bit blind by the end, right? Ed is groping and he can see better by the end. You know, Chris, I mean, use the metaphor of the voice, but, you know, he can kind of see what he was looking for with more clarity. And same with Maurice and his relationship to Shelley. So there's some who come through seeing more, some seeing less. But do we want to talk a little bit about how some people can't see the one who waits, or what that means, or even how sometimes in our own stories we can't see important details or don't understand what they mean, and maybe that piece a little bit?
I guess I was reminded of sometimes denying that I'm part of the story at all. And I don't know if I'm going to come up with a great analogy here. I see a homeless person, even in Worcester, Ohio, and my mind goes to a place that says somebody should help out there. And where's the organization? I'm not really searching at all. I'm trying to release it from my conscience. Whereas in this story, granted, at times they were given a way, one who waits, to begin the pursuit, but they actively engaged to try to find some sort of answer to a search.
That's really good. Kind of in a way, I mean, I don't know if you were saying it like this, but sight as the capacity to also recognize the needs of others and when you can help others. Like at the end, Ed, I mean, I'm taking this in a slightly different way maybe than you meant it, Ken, but Ed sees this person by the side of the road who's maybe having vehicle problems, and he stops, and that ends up being the moment when he goes to help this other person, that it's kind of, he has this revelation or this comfort, you know, that mm-hmm. maybe was his dad. Like mm-hmm. your comment about like seeing a person who has needs. And then if we actually enter into that, sometimes it can open the door for an experience of something deeper or fuller, not only to help them, but also for us, like to transform us. Something really interesting about that. And I feel like there are characters in the story who are genuinely trying to help others. I mean, the one who waits is trying to help Ed, but I feel like there are others. And I think that is an interesting part of sight for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you, Jacob. Yeah. I think what I am doing in relating what I said was I've closed the door to any sort of revelation, certainly by just dismissing it.
Barney, I was kind of wondering too, did you want to make any connections with the song, the Nat King Cole song, When I Grow Too Old to Dream? that Chris had dedicated to Maggie. And I didn't know if you wanted to unpack that a little bit further or.
Yeah. When I wrote the question, I think that it was really fresh, the episode. I was writing these while watching. And then I think the lyrics were fresher in my mind. But now that they've kind of slipped away from me, I can't quite get what I was trying to get at with that question anymore. But did either of you kind of find a real connection with the lyrics or
well in or, your question you also asked does that song also have meaning for Ed, you know? And I don't know, just by the title of the song I was thinking the capacity to dream, to imagine something different, to dare to even hope for something is a quality you don't want to lose. And Ed, I don't know if that's a connection you're making, that Ed very much embodies that. He's a kind of enthusiastic character who's willing to keep reaching out and seeking after and believing that something could be new and better. But I don't know if that's how you meant it or not.
I
will admit, I thought it was all about Maggie. Barney's sort of akin to you. I looked up the lyrics. They're really only two verses. And there's a lot of references to Kiss. Uh-huh. And so I was simply led to say a nice tribute to someone who Chris probably has a newfound respect, a newfound way into her being. Yeah, I couldn't get to Ed on that one. I have to admit.
But I really do appreciate and like the connection that Jacob came up with. Yeah, because that mm-hmm. really is true. Yeah, and we really do see that about Ed, yes. His character really always being open, and in a way, Shelley too. I wanted to at least mention how she goes with it when Ed says, you know, here's one who waits, and he just wants to smell the food. She doesn't respond, you know, with any kind of judgment at all. She says, well, that's. If that's what you think, that's what, you know, here's one who waits burger too, you know, here's one for you and one who were for your friend, you know, she says. And I think that we see maybe she's the least blind of the people, you know, of the white people, as I think, was it Marilyn who said that in the episode. And I think maybe that's why it was so easy for Shelley to, you know, to kind of tell Maurice what he needed to hear, you know, whether it was intentional or not. But, you know, she kind of sensed, she could see enough to sense that he had that need to hear that. And I think that she told him what he needed to hear. But yeah, I think we still see a lot of inability to see in Joel's life. And I think we probably can all really relate to that when we have moments like he is, when we're really looking inward and don't see what, you know, the feelings of the people around us, how they're feeling. And we're just kind of thinking a lot of how all of this relates to me. And then I think we also really see a lot. I thought your example, Ken, was great about how we think, you know, maybe this isn't ours, you know, this isn't for us to deal with. This is for some, you know, established something else to deal with. And, but also kind of connecting it to your story of talking with people on the beach, you know, it maybe the way that we're looking at the problem, at the situation, maybe our idea of what the solution is wrong, or, you know, yeah, we know what the solution is, but how we fit into the solution or into this problem, maybe we're looking at ourselves as we're supposed to fit into the solution as the savior of this person, as the person to rescue them. But maybe what it really is, the way that we fit into this situation as the solution is, you know, like what you were saying about maybe just approaching the person, maybe just talking to the person. And it's hard to see that clearly when we see the problem of homelessness or other situations or people in distress, and we think the one way to help this person is, you know, get them back on their feet, you know, or to do this. And I can't do that, you know, but, you know, some organization is here to do that. But that's the moment that we're brought to that person's, into contact with that person, isn't, maybe we have to see, maybe we can't see because we're looking at the big, at the problem too broadly, that our little part could be, you know, like just approaching that person, just talking to that person instead of trying to solve all their problems, just acknowledging that person. And that's a real hard thing to see, because so many other, because we're seeing so many other things at the moment that we can't quite see how, we can't quite see how we fit in to the solution, because it's too big. You know, it's too big of a problem. We can't, there's no way I can, I'm not equipped to fix this. But if we see at a personal level, a smaller level, we can see, oh, maybe I can't fix this, but maybe I can do a little thing to help. And who knows where that will go. And that's something that like, I think that Ken, you're kind of recognizing that, and I think we all can recognize, but it's just so hard to see that, that first step.
That's really good. Wow. I like that. Indeed. Thank you for sharing that, Barney. It's really insightful. Mm-hmm. It makes me feel like sometimes in life, the problem or the issue is secondary, really just to meeting a person where they are, like as a person or a fellow human being, like, and trying to empathize and just be present. Like, various characters in the story have more helpful or less helpful information, but the ones that really make a difference are the ones who are just there to listen to the other and, you know, be with them. And that's a good point, Barney. If I'm hearing you right, it's not mm-hmm. just always about fixing, it's about presence. That's so neat about the one who waits, because that's kind of what he is in the story. He's a presence. He never fixes the problem, but just his presence is helpful to Ed. Yes. Are there any final comments you, either of you, would like to make before we close our episode?
I would just say, in lieu of the last two bits of commentary, very meaningful, I wonder sometimes, as I was relating my beach experience, that would have been years where I was at an age where this program was running first run. And we can't possibly know. But I wonder if somehow, subconsciously, there was an influential factor in my life, because we would watch these, and I'd go to school the next day, and there were a couple of us, you know, particularly one person who got me to watch this show, where we're discussing it, not in the depth that all of us are in the time frame, because we have the luxury of that. But I can't know, but boy, I sure do remember being given cause for thinking in certain ways that quite possibly I had not done previously.
Yeah, that's just so neat to hear. And I think that with a lot of these episodes, watching them now, we often, I think we often hear real poignant messages that they have, and I think we often walk away, you know, wondering about things and seeing things differently. And we hope that all of you out there, our listeners, after listening to this episode with us, have found some things to think about differently too, whether it's related to the episode or how things are in your life and the way things are going around you. And most importantly, we are very honored to have you here watching along with us or listening along on the podcast. And we know very well that you remember that it's always more fun to watch these and listen to them with a bunch of people, as Ed always says. And we hope too that you are looking forward to the next episode of the Two World Podcast as much as we are. So for Ken and Jacob, I am Barney, and we will see you all again next time.